Leadership Show with Andy Peck.
It's great to have you along with us this week. I'm Andy Peck, your host. Looking forward once again to a conversation that will encourage you as you seek to be an influence for God where he has placed you. Now, if we were to take a poll of the subjects most likely to keep you awake at night, conflict would be one of them. Either looking at conflict you're receiving because of your leadership decisions, or potential conflict with a one-to-one conversation you know won't be appreciated. As someone said, if you enjoy such conversations, there's probably something wrong with you. But if leaders don't tackle areas of conflict, it's hard for progress to be made. So I'm delighted to be joined by someone who teaches churches how to manage conflict. She is Madge Obaseki, and she has had 25 years of experience of providing training and organizational development services for nonprofit and faith sector organizations. This includes church growth consultancy and courses on managing conflict. So welcome back, Madge. It's exactly 4 years since you're on the show. It was looking at church growth last time. So this time we're looking at a narrower but important topic. So welcome back.
Thank you. It's really good to see you as well. Looking forward to this.
Well, your own background, first of all, and how you got involved in sort of this kind of field of training and work in this kind of area.
Well, my professional background is corporate human resource management, and my specialism is organizational development. And I absolutely love training and facilitation. And you mentioned the word teacher at the beginning. I'm not really a teacher, but I'm much more a facilitator. So I draw things out of people, either individually or groups. The reason why I'm in more or less full-time ministry now is because I got that call about 7 years ago, but I tried to ignore it for a few years through disobedience, I have to say. And but things got very difficult when I decided, like Jonah, to try and hide myself away. Because I was enjoying the status of being in human resource management. I was very well paid. I was happy with my lot. So why should I go into ministry? And I questioned it, I second-guessed myself. But then when three different people approached me at different times who I've never seen since and told me that this is what God wants you to do with your gift, and on the third time, by then we had nearly lost our house because the income that I loved was almost taken away from me, I decided to surrender. And so I have been running Grow the Church now for, well, it's more or less 7 years, but it's changed in its brand and a slight change in the name, etc. But I do love it. Absolutely love it. And well, part of that is I've written a couple of books, but I've also started a podcast, which is about a year old now, called the Healthy Church Growth Show podcast for leaders across the Christian realm.
Fabulous. Well, when they finish the leadership show, they can go on to your your podcast. Absolutely, Madge. Thank you. Yeah. So let's look at the common areas of conflict in church life as you've found it, as you've been working in this kind of field.
Mm. Well, you know what, Andy? It's not just church life, is it? Because conflict exists everywhere, you know. And I really have thought about this over the years, and the main reason we have conflict in any organization, including the church, is a lack of communication or a lack of unclear communication. And that actually starts with the church, because we're focused on the church, with what is your vision? Have you communicated it? What is the mission, the reason, and the purpose for you doing whatever you've been asked to do in your local setting? what are the objectives? So I mentioned to you before we started that I worked with a church and they asked me to facilitate a retreat for their staff and volunteers. And they had a very clear objective for the year 2021, an increase in membership, as they put it. And so we focused on that. That was a clear objective. But, you know, the big thing that most people, I would say most organizations, miss out is on values. How do you want people to treat each other? What behaviors do you want them to display? So, of course, conflict comes when you haven't communicated any of those four categories, but expect people to know what you're thinking in your head. And a lot of the time, these things are not written down. And so that's where I think the core of conflict comes from.
And we're using conflict as a, obviously it is potentially negative, and my illustration at the start is it keeps us awake at night. But I guess a healthy church will have areas of conflict as people discuss and grow and learn from each other and express their opinions to one another.
You know, conflict for me can only be healthy if people talk about it. My experience over, it's over 25 years actually, but most people that I know, the majority, will try to shy away from potential conflict situations. That becomes unhealthy. What is healthy is actually working through that. But the reason why people avoid dealing with conflict is because they're not sure how to, or they fear conflict from the situation that they actually see, or they might feel that if they broach that situation, somebody might leave my assembly or my church, as people put it. All sorts of preconceived ideas that stop people from dealing with it. So it can be healthy, but only if we deal with it.
And would you have some principles that you would teach to a leader in terms of, you know, some things they should have in their mind as ahead of having a conversation that they know will have conflict in it, or they know someone's, you know, not keen on what they've done or said?
Well, first of all, I think, and this is purely from my HR space and in my head, is you need some sort of, you need to have a system, something written down that says, this is the way we will deal with a particular situation. It's a guide. We're not saying that you have to follow it letter to letter, but we do need something that says, you know, if somebody says something in public about someone else, what do you do? You know, there are lots of go-to verses that we've got, you know, Matthew 18, 15 to 17. You know, that's a real go-to for most people. There are criticisms about it, but generally it's a slight, it's a guideline. I actually like using 1 Corinthians, because especially the first four verses where you have, you know, Paul talks about divisions. And so we need to make sure that we have systems in place that will deal with specifics. And as I said earlier, don't avoid the conversation in the first place. If you bury your head in the sand, it's either going to get worse, it festers, and unfortunately, it leads to very unfortunate things that we've both seen in the past happen with churches, and sometimes it gets very public. So it's about being clear about what it is you are dealing with in the first place.
Just, yeah, the Matthew 18, of course, is if someone sins against you, you should go and chat it out. And if not, if it doesn't work, take someone else and then bring it to the whole church. And the 1 Corinthians, of course, is Paul concerned that there have been such division in the church that some people are supporting, in quotes, Christ, some Apollos and some Peter, and, you know. So, yeah.
Ethan, et cetera. And, you know, with 1 Corinthians, you know, if you look at it, if you look at those leaders, if you look at Apollos and you look at Cephas, for instance, you'll see that they may not have done it intentionally, but my analysis of it is that perhaps they were at fault as leaders because they were drawing people to them rather than pointing people to Jesus. And as a result of that, people were not being discipled as they needed to be. And they thought that, you know, Apollos and Cephas and all these other people were the people to look up to, the be end and all, if you like. Yeah. And that actually causes a huge amount of conflict, I've noticed over the years, in local churches.
Yeah. And of course, in that setting, Paul could quite clearly say, this is right and this is wrong. You shouldn't be divided in this way. Obviously, there's some other areas of conflict where it's kind of a matter of opinion, where Christians maybe differ on whether this is an area that they you know, like baptism would be a classic, obviously, or church leadership approaches. And so sometimes there's conflict over the way of being Christian, which Christians disagree with. And I guess there's a slightly difference in the way you approach it. If you know quotes that you've got chapter and verse on your side, it's a bit different when actually you might think, well, I have this opinion, but I realize other people disagree.
I mean, you've mentioned a few examples, and some of them are to do with doctrine, whereas others are to do with perhaps to do with people's morals and where we stand in the Bible. But we have to go back to, and this is where I would say, because sometimes I hear people saying the Bible says, without thinking about the culture and the history behind it. But in this case, I would say you need to go back to the Bible, the biblical principles. What does the Bible say about those specifics? But you've got to respect the fact that traditions have arisen because people are of different denominations, possibly because the Bible does say there are certain things that people should or should not do. But there are ways and means of handling it, Andy, because what we find is I have had not personal experience, but I've actually witnessed and watched when a preacher has a teacher, a pastor, a church leader has actually been on the pulpit and has actually preached about an issue that has happened within that assembly, and it's taken as a whole lesson. And of course, that just unravels into bitterness and acrimony and, frankly, you know, people walking off and leaving when perhaps they weren't ready to do. So it's about putting everything in context. And again, don't avoid speaking to the individuals directly. Why do we need to use that public platform to berate people? Wouldn't it be better to teach them or show them the way through private conversations, one-to-one? Of course, that's very difficult at the moment because we're in a Zoom era. And so, you know, we've got social distancing there, but we can still get on a video and we can still talk the way we are as well. But I think, you know, it's not one size fits all, is what I'm saying to you, answering your question. It has to do with a balance of things, but definitely respecting that individual. And definitely, whether it's an individual, it could be a whole department, actually. And I've seen departments suffer from this. Praise and worship team, for instance. But it's not been handled properly because it's become very public. I hope that's answered your question.
No, well, sure. And I think the wise lesson is that if you're a leader, you need to have the courage to talk one-on-one rather than maybe, in quotes, abusing the pulpit. You know, thinking that you can get away with having a go at a situation when actually you need to be open to them coming back to you if need be and say, well, I'm not sure I believe that, or I'm not sure I think that. So thank you. That's very helpful. Now, one tricky area to touch on, Madge, but I think we probably need to, is whether there's any kind of difference in with gender in terms of conflict. So guys with guys and women with women, whether there's anything about the way in which it's handled that could be different, whether you're a guy or a girl. Talk to that for
well,
me.
Well, you know, quite frankly, this we shouldn't be having this conversation because we're all children of God, so sure. We should be treating each other equally. But we know that that's not the case for lots of different reasons. For example, you have people that come from a culture where it's male-centric. You have a situation where people were brought up to believe that women are not equal to men. You have other situations where women believe that men are not equal to women. There's all sorts of reasons why the gender thing, gender's one thing of many, you know. We've got the cultural thing, you've got the black, white, you've got the youth versus the, dare I say, the boomers. Yes. You've got all these different categories that make it very difficult for people to see that they're not in the right, you know. For instance, I attended many years ago, I attended an assembly who had that attitude towards women. But it kind of backfired in the end because for some reason, I won't go into it now, we don't have the time, but the women started to rise up and say, well, hang on a minute, that's not right. That's not right at all. In some denominations, for instance, women are not allowed to be any sort of leader at all. They're just there to serve. And that obviously causes conflict because those same women in the outside world are doctors, they're lawyers, they're professionals, teachers, etc. So we have to be very aware in 2021, how can we move that forward? Andy, honestly, that question is for another episode, so invite me back to talk about it.
Okay, we'll do that. Okay, Madge. And I need to touch on the fact, of course, we're in a divided nation for all sorts of reasons, not least, of course, because of Brexit. And, you know, Christians have been very vehement one way or the other on the Brexit issue. Would you kind of advocate that within a Christian church we don't touch on politics, or do we touch on it but do it in a better way? What would be your counsel on that, Madge?
You know, I keep getting people, or you know, online, you see a lot, you know, we're in the world but we're not of the world, you know, we're otherworldly, but we live in communities. And you know, Andy, I think we're here to serve ourselves as a community, but we're here to serve others outside our community. That's political in itself. And when you look at Jesus, and how he handled the politicians of the day, which actually were the Pharisees, yes, you know, through the Sanhedrin, they were politicians of the day, but he stood up to them. In fact, Jesus was political, and some people would argue a politician. I'm not sure I'd go that far, but he was certainly very political because he was dealing with societal issues of the day. Now, if we're followers of Christ, we probably need to be doing the same thing. We may not have to get involved with all the violence and things that we have all witnessed over the last few years, but we certainly need to use our voices. And why is it that local and national governments are approaching faith communities to provide services? For instance, in times of COVID, we've seen a rise in mental health issues, domestic violence, etc. Now, faith communities can help with that. These are all political subjects. So I think that might answer the question on where I stand on it.
Fair enough. Fair enough. Thank you. Now, if a local church asked you to lead a day on conflict management, what are the kind of things that you would... You mentioned communication earlier, the importance of knowing your values and communicating well. Are there other things that you touch on that kind of day? I'm obviously giving you listeners a bit of a taster to the kind of work that you might do with them if they wanted to invite you.
Absolutely. Well, the first thing is if I'm approached and commissioned to carry out such a training, I have to, number one, speak to the commissioner, whoever's commissioning it. It could be the senior pastor or one of their staff, and find out what's behind this. Why have you asked me to come in the first place? What's really going on? Because it's pointless running a generic course when you don't know where the challenges are coming from. So I approach it as a facilitator, and sometimes a mediator, but not all the time, but mostly as a facilitator to get to the core of the problem. For example, I was asked to do a piece of training for a church who had mainly millennial leaders some years ago. And because they were millennials, they didn't have a huge amount of leadership experience, but they were made leaders without really checking whether they were qualified. And as a result, there was a lot of conflict coming on. And I found that out in the initial consultation meeting. And the training is written around that. So questions are asked. It's a round table. It's a discussion. It's teaching them principles, but it's also dealing with the actual matter itself, which is the best use of time.
Right. And so you kind of seek to tailor make the day. You don't have a kind of I take it off the shelf. Here's my conflict talk.
It never works. And I sure. have tried that years ago and it really doesn't work. It has to be bespoke.
Madge, if people wanted to invite you along, that you have a consultation to start with. Is that how it works?
That's right. Yeah. And so it would be a consultation. At the moment, it's all Zoom.
Sure.
Or whatever platform we decide to use. So there's a consultation. There's a form that's filled in with a lot of questions on it. And then they decide whether they want to hire based on, you know, the economics, etc. We choose a date. I need to find out how many people are going to be there, what their levels of experience are, and again, what the problem is in the first place.
Do you have any, and this may be a tricky question to answer, keeping confidences, but the kind of areas that you've looked at in terms of the conflict, the specifics, would you have had church splits or leadership splits or that kind of thing?
I haven't got to the church split because usually they split by then, sadly.
Right. Yeah.
But we definitely have. I've worked with a management committee who, were going in completely different directions. And part of that was, frankly, and it was really quite basic, but it took days to work out. It was a lack of administration. People underestimate the power of administration, strategic administration. But that actually takes time to work out. So I've worked with management committees, as I said, young leaders, established churches, and I worked with a young, very young church fairly recently, not only to look at conflict, but to look at strategic review generally as well. So each one is bespoke.
And you yourself are based where, Madge?
Northeast London in Palmer's Green, which is the London Borough of Enfield.
Fabulous. Okay, so that just if people, obviously you, I'm sure you would travel, but that you're London based, and so that's kind of be the place where people will find you.
Yeah.
But obviously
via the USA.
You've travelled to the USA. Well, hey.
Yeah,
so.
Not at the moment, but it's something I have done, yeah.
Sure, good stuff. Good. Any last kind of thoughts on managing conflict before we close, Madge?
It's a reminder to everybody, Andy, that if you do have conflict, the best thing to do is to deal with it and not pretend that it's not there, or not be fearful of thinking the worst before you'd be surprised what a conversation will do. So I would encourage any leader out there to make sure that, you know, put it in prayer, but definitely speak to the individual or, if possible, the department to make sure that you deal with it before it festers.
Okay. And your details for people to get in touch, should they want to?
Yeah. So I'm madgeobaseki.com/videos.
Okay. And Obaseki is Obaseki.
If anyone's
taking notes, Madge Obaseki. Thank you, Madge, very much. Well, it's been fabulous to chat with you. We've kind of touched the surface to some degree, but hopefully we've raised the issue of managing conflict and the importance of doing that. And it may be that some listeners are thinking, hey, this may be my moment. I really need to get on with it. So if you're facing conflict, maybe this is the encouragement to get on and get it sorted. So thank you so much, Madge.
No, thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Well, you've been listening to The Leadership Show with me, Andy Peck, and my joy to have welcomed Madge Obaseki as my guest this week. Sadly, I've been part of groups and churches where conflict was avoided rather than managed. It can be tough for a leader to discern when to get involved with a situation and when to just let it run its course. But I hope this conversation has reminded you that gentle questioning and gracious conversation can head things off before they become a problem for people within the church or organisation you're part of. I hope very much this is not something you're facing just now, and if you are, that it's soon resolved. If you need outside help, well, maybe someone like Madge is someone you could consider inviting. But whether your week is one with conflict or peace, may you know the Prince of Peace himself, enabling you to bless others as you use your influence well. This is Andy Peck, looking forward to your company once again. Until next week.
To get in touch, email andy.peck@premier.org.uk.